Welcome to the REI Mastermind Network, where host Jack Haas gathers amazing stories from leaders in real estate investing. In each episode, our guests will tell you what they're doing that works, what they've tried that failed, and best of all, you'll learn actionable steps to take your real estate investing to the next level. Now, here's Jack with another value-packed episode.
Charles Carrillo joins me here today, and you can learn what his team is up to by heading over to harborsidepartners.com. And we're going to be talking a bit about a little bit of everything, commercial real estate investing, syndication, but more importantly, how you grew to the size you have. You're managing up towards, at least when this was written, 3,000 doors. But I think I saw somewhere along the line that you started with a mere 16.
Yeah. I started with three and grew from there. And 3,000 is everything that we've purchased over it. We sold between 2021 and 2022, we sold six properties, maybe seven with one from last year. Or 2 years ago. So it's, we've sold a lot of those properties and we're somewhere around probably 800 units now, 850. But started with a three unit. And back then we didn't have a word for it, but it was house hacking now. And pretty much where you're living in one of the units, you're renting out the other two, you become a landlord overnight and you learn the business.
Yeah, it's a great way to get started, especially, you know, it's floors me it usually floors people when I tell them with first-time home buyer, you can buy up to four units, at least in my market, and that can be a game changer for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a great thing that I don't think people utilize as much. And I understand it's not the most scalable model, but if you want to learn the business on a very simple, small scale and understand what's involved with it, it's the perfect way to go.
Yeah, it's does a dad's heart good when my daughter, she's about to graduate high school, but she hasn't been saving up for a car or anything like that. She's been saving up for her first rental. So
nice. Very good.
That's good. If I can get her to start at that age, I think I'll do a good, it'll be good.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about your current investing strategy? What do your team focus on now?
Yeah. So what we do now is I've been investing, as I said before, we started in 2006 when I started just as a small multifamily investor. And I purchased properties myself until, we started syndication in 2017, 2018, being involved with those deals. And that really allowed us to really catapult our business to where it is today because being able to access funds from private investors and past investors and to be able to purchase properties and better properties and bigger properties. So right now, what I would say for our specialty, what is our buy box, is going to be we like 1990 to usually 2010 built properties. We like them and we're focusing now on three markets. I'm based in South Florida. The markets we mainly are focusing on currently are Dallas-Fort Worth, Greater Atlanta, and then also what we call it the I-4 corridor here through Florida, which really goes from Jacksonville, Orlando through to Tampa. And those are the areas that we really like. We work with three different operators in those areas. So if we're not on the ground in those areas, we have operators that we can work with to handle a lot of boots on the ground while we handle a lot of the asset management. And we're really purchasing 100 plus unit apartment complexes. I'm not completely dead set on that. We can go a little bit below if the property is good, if it's better than what we usually purchase, something like that, or it's in a better area. We'll change on those numbers a little bit, but typically that's really what we're looking at.
So what caused you to choose those markets in particular?
There's a lot of growth markets in the United States, and these were three of them that we were able to find good on the ground, boots on the ground type operators that we could partner with. Because we had, when we started syndicating and working with past investors, we were mainly working near where we were in Florida. So at that time, I was living over by Tampa and St. Pete. And I was, we were working with properties that we were buying in Tampa. And you had investors that wanted to diversify a little bit. And we also wanted to diversify what we were working with. So I had done a lot of past investing. And some of the groups that I've done past investing with, we started working directly with them in the sense of bringing them not only capital as before, but also now we're also adding in like asset management services, due diligence services, some of the pre-closing, some of the at-risk capital to these deals and assisting them with the project. And that's really how we've really focused on those markets. There's tons of different operators out there. We have a really strict requirement list of when we're working with people, and it's usually ones that we've passively invested prior or one of my partners has, and that we have a track record with, and that they've been through at least one downturn, you know, prior to all the COVID. So really someone that's gone through GFC, whether it was with, usually it's probably not syndicated capital, but with their own money. But if they're running multifamily or rental properties during that time, I mean, that's really what we're looking for. Someone that went through a serious setback that, I mean, COVID lasted like 2 months, right? Financially, when you're looking at it because of all the money that came in. But, you know, it lingered many years when we went through 2007, 2008. I mean, it went 2 or 3 years all the way past there until it started really on the upward trend. So you had to manage properties for those times. You had to deal with loans that might have been coming up. And it, you know, takes someone that's really an operator to kind of weather those markets.
You've used the term operator a couple times now. Is that going beyond property management?
No, when I say operator, it's usually in a syndication, you'll have, you know, limited partners on one side. You'll have the general partners on the other side. When I say general partners inside that, those people that are running the deal. And within that general partner, under that umbrella, you're going to have different people in there. You're going to have people that are going to focus mainly on raising money. You're going to have people that are focusing sometimes on asset management. You're going to have people that are finding deals and doing underwriting. And you're going to have people that are doing like the operations. Operations and the asset management are like this, are the same, pretty much the same thing. However, there's some parts to operating a deal that are going to require you to have to visit the property, you know, speak with contractors to review what's actually happening there. And there's parts of asset management that do not require you to actually go there. So when I built my property portfolio myself personally when I was in Connecticut. I moved to Florida in 2012 and I hired a third-party property manager. So they were running all my properties up there. However, I was doing asset management where I was reviewing what's happening. If we had large CapEx projects, we'd probably go up there for them. However, for the most part, you're working with the property manager and then we're making decisions really on the marketing, on what we're doing with tenant issues, on what really is the goal of the property, what we're doing with rents and everything like that. And that's really the asset management portion that we focus on when we're coming into deals that where we're not locally located by the property.
Earlier, you mentioned that you have these boots on the ground, these operators. What type of process do you go through to vet them out to make sure it's a good fit for your company?
Usually, it's us passively investing with the group prior, having a face-to-face relationship with them that we've known for many years. So when you invest passively in a dealer, really any type of multifamily syndication deal, no matter what side you're on, it lasts for... They've been much shorter during the COVID period when people are buying and selling pretty quickly. But usually it is a 4, 5, 6 year type partnership. So this takes many years for you to find out how an operator is running a property and how they are going to manage, you know, your funds, their funds, and the property itself. So going through this process, there's always going to be ups and downs. You know, you're not going to see it when you're looking at an offering memorandum through a group when they send it out to you and it's all shiny with all the graphics and everything. But there's going to be ups and downs where their numbers were off here, their numbers were off there, and really seeing how they kind of roll with those punches, how they operate the deal, where they're going through these issues that do come up every time that you buy a property in one way or another. That makes it very important of how you know it when you're getting into when any type of issues arise and the communication and the overall condition of the property. And, you know, really what they said before, is it really coming through in the sense of, you know, we've worked with this management company before, we're not going to have any issues. And if you don't have any issues with the management company, and everything's doing great, then they do know what they're doing when they're picking a management company and, you know, everything else that goes along with it. And you really kind of line up of what they estimated beforehand and really what happened on the end and then the whole process in between. But having the relationship with that operator, because it's not just our money when we're going into these deals. It's one thing if I passively invest and you can just kind of, you know, you do your own due diligence, whatever that is, and then you throw money in. It's a different thing if not only are we putting our money in, but we're also working with passive investors that are investing with us into our deal, which is going to be that they're going to be one of the, you know, the co-general partners on it with us. And we have to know exactly how they've operated deals before, how that's gone, and to make sure that into the future, we're going to be able to make money and be a great, safe investment for our investors.
Earlier, you mentioned that you sold quite a few properties. What caused those sales and what was the outcome?
So we started selling properties. I had for my personal portfolio of small properties that I had up north in Connecticut, I sold those properties at the beginning of 2022, started selling them at the end of 2021. And the main thing that the catalyst for that was that we had a change in management. My previous property manager, who was very, very good, he was retiring. He was selling off his business and he was really getting rid of the smaller properties out of his portfolio so we could sell larger to a larger property management company. So what I did was, you know, I had most of them were owned by me. I had my brother that owned some of them with me. And what we did was we made the decision to sell and we brought in an interim property manager who was pretty terrible, but you're really crunched because you're going to sell this property in let's hopefully 3, 4, or 5 months. You're not going to really find the best property manager because some of them, when we told them exactly what was happening and we were completely honest with them saying, hey, we're trying to sell these properties, they don't want to take on a new client. You know what I mean? They don't want to go through the whole thing of setting up a property just for 4 or 5 months, right? So that was one of the catalysts we had was a change in management. And also what we saw too is we saw our properties because those properties up north were in central Connecticut, not a growing market. We saw a lot of those property prices coming up to and actually surpassing what they were at the height of 05, 06. So really, we knew that they weren't going to go much higher than that. And then on the other ones we had for our syndication properties, we saw deals that we had people coming in offering us deals because they weren't on market per se. They had people coming in and offering deals on properties that would go over exactly what we had estimated on the properties. And so instead of finishing up the whole business plan, we said to sell the property. And some of our investors at the time didn't like the idea. Some did. Now they all do because it was somehow we were chose a time to sell it. But really that was the main thing is that we had people with offers coming in and you can't really turn it down. If you tell your investors your goal is to get the property to this valuation and then sell it, and it does that sooner than later, I mean, it's, you know, you have to look out for the interest of what's going to be the best for everybody as a whole. You know what I mean? And at that point, it was to take money off the table.
Just to remind everybody, head over to harborsidepartners.com to learn more what Charles and his team are up to. If you like what we're talking about so far, do us a quick favor and share this with one of your real estate investing friends. And this has been such a great conversation so far. Do us a quick favor if you're watching us on YouTube, like and subscribe. So, Charles, I'd be interested. You've been doing this for a number of years now. Based on your experience, and now that you're a syndicator and you're taking down 100 plus door properties, would you have started in the same place you did before, or would you have picked a different trajectory?
I would have started where I was. It was just something of, I would have just bought more properties. I mean, it, you get kind of scarred from going through 07, 08, and we didn't have any issues with losing properties because we weren't flipping properties during that time. We were buying buy and hold type investors. So it wasn't an issue for us. However, when you start looking at properties in 2010, 2011, and 2012, and you start seeing these property prices go up and you were there a couple of years before, and you're like, oh, wow, this is really getting, heated. And you kind of, you're on the sidelines a little bit. And, everybody makes mistakes. It was just something that we were very picky when we were buying property. So we didn't buy as many at that point. And when really getting back into it, obviously everybody says they want to buy more properties earlier. But I love the idea of where I started. 6 years of self-managing properties gives you a experience into multifamily investing that, I mean, not many people know. There's very few people that have ever self-managed multifamily property. And maybe 6 years was too long. I could have learned that experience in shorter time, but it gives you an experience for the rest of your career about how to deal with tenants, how to deal with contractors, on the ground. You know what I mean? Collecting rent from people, making deals with people to get rent paid, payment plans. Usually most operators, most syndicators will leave that to their property managers to make the decisions. But now when you talk to that manager, you're going to know exactly what they're talking about intimately because you've lived it before.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that being said, I'm sure you've seen all kinds of investors, different walks of life. What are some of the biggest mistakes you've seen from other investors that you think that could have been avoided?
I think some of the biggest mistakes you see is that you have investors out there that they might not be doing their numbers accurately in the beginning. They are going in with very limited reserve funds. They're going in with they're thinking their property is going to outperform what it probably will be. And these just throw everything off, because if you go into a property, it needs work. You're going in, you don't have the money to do all that work. You're waiting for, cash flow to come around to pay for some of these renovations. It's not a safe way of going in, and you're really getting behind the eight ball. And I think that is some of the issues. And always the over leveraging is something that comes out. You know what I mean? It's very, if you're in the beginning of a bull market and you're over leveraging, you'll do well, but no one knows when that's going to slow down or when that's going to happen. So people with over levered properties, those are the ones that we find out about in the news afterwards, because those are the ones where the properties go back to the bank.
Do you think that is one of the things that is pushed a little bit too much in our industry, whether it's, real estate gurus or what have you, the concept of leverage?
Yeah, that's one of the things that gets pushed, that, for lack of a better word, the gurus. But the problem with gurus, I think, too, is that they're pushing people that should be buying that three family and house hacking. They're pushing them into doing syndicate large deals with other people's money. And I think that's always a mistake. Whenever I coach or mentor anybody, it's always something: buy a property first. This is how I do it. And if you don't want to do it, then you have to buy a property yourself, and you have to, however you do it, and you're renting it out before you start taking other people's money. And that's like something that I'm dead set on, because I feel that the information you learn, no matter how big or small that property is, it's a lot more than you're going to learn from listening to any type of shows or reading any type of books. You'll get a lot of great information, but people get into it, they can't raise all the money, they over leverage, they don't have reserve funds. And this is like the beginning of the end for those properties. And real estate investors, they love to leverage properties. I mean, it's a great way of increasing our returns. I had a mentor tell me years back, it's fine to over leverage a little bit when you're starting out. However, you have to scale that back as you start growing. And some people just don't. You know what I mean? They keep on pushing it. And it's something that when you start looking at properties that may be owned by some old school mom and pop investors for 15, 20 years, you find one thing that's pretty common all between those, and they're all paid off. And so you have people that are taking down their leverage as they're getting into later innings of their life.
You've hinted at some lessons learned early on. Could you share some of those lessons, and what were some of the harder ones that you had to deal with?
I think some of the mistakes I made was not having accurate budgets. My first property in particular, it was a little bit more of a heavy value add. It was a heavy renovation, more than what I should have been taking on for my first deal. And so that was one thing. So my budget was off on that. And I think also understanding, for my first couple of deals, I tried to say, there's going to be work that's going to be done. I'll finance some of this, with using cash flow from the property. And what I should have been doing is I should have had that money sitting aside in a savings account just for those projects. And I did have money sitting aside for it, but it should have been set aside just for these projects that were coming up, not just in the general fund. So I think that was something that, not having the proper, not being properly capitalized when you're buying properties. And of course, in the beginning, it's tough. You know what I mean? You don't have as much money and you're figuring stuff out. But as I started going, I think it was like on my third rental property, which was my small commercial property, my first commercial property I purchased. And that one, I actually did it correctly. I had all the funds put together. I had them all earmarked for it. Of course, I went over my budget. However, I was able to finish that project enough to rent it in about 100 days from purchasing it completely vacant. But completely finished it with all the bells and whistles within a year. So that's how I did. I got the main stuff out of the way. I raised money for that, got people in there. And then, your small little cosmetic things here and there, I did that over the next year. And I think if people go in there and they're well capitalized, they get long-term debt, 5-10 years fixed at least on your first deal, longer the better, you're going to avoid a lot of the issues that you have that could possibly happen to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you share a little bit about what you're working on right now? Is there a deal that you're actively raising for?
We are not raising money for any deals right now. 2023 was a very slow year. We didn't buy any deals in 2023. So we have a buy box. We're very strict with it. We had some properties that came across that got close, but they're a little too old for what we like to work with. So we passed on those deals. But we're always underwriting deals. You know what I mean? It's just something that the deal flow really slowed down in 2023. And, you know, with hopes of everybody with the interest rates, hoping that interest rates are going to go down and values are going to go back up. But yeah, we will see what happens here. Nothing else that we're working on right now. We're always looking at deals and just making sure that really, you know, you really have to sometimes sharpen your pencil to get deals, but you want to make sure you don't do it too much because, you know, I just saw on social media, is that literally like a month ago, maybe less than a month ago, I saw a deal that we turned down working with, and it ended up going back to the bank. You know what I mean? 85% leverage. Their rate was under 4% in a market where they weren't able to go to the rents anymore. And yeah, the people, the operators gave back to the bank, and those investors, I guess, are losing their money.
You know, you mentioned staying within your buy box. That takes more discipline than I think a lot of people realize, because especially when you're dealing with a number of partners, I would imagine there is an appetite to acquire and to flex some of those rules or flex some of those, the buy box walls, if you will. What type of mindset or what type of rules did you set in advance to make sure that you stay true to your buy box requirements?
It's the main thing is having the operator on the ground. And then it's also, we don't want to get into too old the properties, right? So turn down properties that are in the 1970s. Hey, I'll buy a property myself with like a JV, like in a joint venture with one or two other people that are that age. But as you get older properties, that's when it gets to a certain point, that's when you're not just doing cosmetic repairs to it. You're also doing a lot of bones replacements, right? And that's where you're doing like mechanicals, pipes, electrical, you know, stuff like this. It gets extremely expensive, especially if you're holding that property for 5 or 10 years. Now it just got 5 or 10 years older. So it's one of those things that when we do underwriting, I have one underwriter on our team, mainly looks through initially. And then we have one outside underwriter that reviews when we get very close to pulling the trigger. And what happens is that they only do so many deals. And if it doesn't fit in these parameters and they do it very quickly, it's out. You know what I mean? And I won't hire another underwriter because we want to make sure if it doesn't fit initially into these, then it's not. You know, the only time that we would go smaller on deals or anything like that is if there is a economy of scale that's happening there. So if we or one of our partners has a property in the vicinity, like very close, you know, within like a mile or so, that's maybe when we go down in size on properties because you still have those economies of scale. But it's difficult to buy smaller properties and have the on-site management and have it worthwhile because really for 100 units, you pretty much are going to have the same on-site management than you would for maybe 75 or 80, right? And so now when you're getting up, the more units you can do with the same on-site management, the lower cost per unit it's going to cost to manage it. And that's an important part to our business plan, making sure that we're going to be able to offer the best product to our tenants and at the best possible price.
Where are you sourcing most of these properties?
Most of our properties come from our operating brokers that we work with. And you know, when we're working with partners, like you were saying before, it becomes a little difficult because you're consistently getting sent deals that people want to do. And then you have to thoughtfully, you know, turn down deals that maybe don't fit what you're trying to do. And you know, you want to make sure that you want to make sure that you're included on future deals that they might do. So it takes a continual relationship with them and with any brokers you have. Especially like I got a deal sent from a broker yesterday, and it was all like one bedrooms and studio, something that we won't deal with, right? A property here in Florida, and you know, have to write back to them, even though you know within a few minutes you see exactly what you don't want to deal with the property, and just you know politely tell them, hey, you know, this is not something that we're going to move forward with, you know, but please let us know on future deals, and you know, you just hope that this isn't the last one they send you, and it never really is, but it's something that you have that communication with who you're working with, and that puts you above. Because most people would just delete that out of their box if they even looked at it. So it's something that keeping and maintaining those relationships with brokers or with any other partners you're working with that might be focusing more on sourcing those properties is important.
Is there any tips or strategies you have for people that would want to establish that initial relationship so that the brokers start to feel comfortable with them?
Yeah, number one thing is if you want to impress a broker, number one, know exactly what you want to buy. So if you want to buy 10 to 20 unit properties, make sure you're first of all talking to a broker that sells those properties, but tell them exactly not only the market, not only the city, but parts of the city that you want to buy in. That's going to tell them. And then also, if you ask them initially, hey, can you send me some of your old properties that you've closed, and you kind of review those, and now you can send them back and say that, you know, 123 Main Street I liked, 123 Oak Street I didn't like, and you tell them why, that tells them so much information about what you're doing. It also tells them the more, because you have people that are really general, and you can tell somebody, oh, I just want to buy properties in, you know, in Orlando that are this. Well, you know, that's a huge area. You know what I mean? So the thing is that if you tell them specifically, in this neighborhood, in this part, in this there, this size of the properties built between these times, and then you bring that to the broker, now they have something. And they're going to widen that a little bit too. If you tell them 10 to 20 units, something comes across their desk at 8 or 24, they're going to send it to you, right? But the thing though is that just that you've told them, you know, I'm not buying 50, 70 unit properties, I'm buying these. And then now when they put you in their CRM, they know exactly what you're buying. And they know that you're more likely, since you've done an evaluation, you know exactly what you're buying and what you can buy. You're going to take you a lot more seriously than someone just comes off and says, I'm buying in this market, in the city, you know, anything 50 units plus.
Reminding everybody again, harborsidepartners.com. That's going to be a clickable link in the show notes. This has been a fantastic conversation, Charles. But before I let you go, we'll just dive into some of the rapid fire questions if you're ready for them.
Sure.
What lie do real estate investors tell themselves and sometimes to others?
They can finance all the renovations through cash flow of the property.
What book would you recommend, or what are you reading right now?
My most recommended book would be the 80-20 principle. It works with people in all different parts of their life, no matter what you do for work or personally. And you read it. And it's one of those books, you read it, you put down a little bit, and you wonder how much it actually pertains to your life. And you'll find out in many different facets it does.
If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
I think like what I said before, buy more properties. I think always, you know, I always like to see myself. I don't like sitting on the sidelines, and I'm always wary of people that say that. I think we're always buyers. You don't have to always buy to be a buyer, but you always have to review deals and know what's going on in the market. And I think if you continually do that, you'll know exactly what's happening, and it'll make you a better real estate investor.
What single strategy, process, or tool have you implemented in your business that has had a direct time-saving impact?
ActiveCampaign. ActiveCampaign, I got from one of my mentors about 3 years ago, and I put in this business. I have another business with my brother, and we utilize it fully. My wife utilizes it. Everybody I know that's done anything knows that you're getting ActiveCampaign, because it's just a fantastic time-saving tool, and you can utilize it for businesses, all types of businesses, and it's pretty inexpensive.
Well, Charles, is there a question or concept you wish we would have covered here today?
No, I think we covered everything. It was a lot of great information. I hope it added a lot of value to you and to also your audience.
Oh, this was great. I appreciate your time. It was great meeting you, and I hope you'll come back again sometime.
Sure, I'd be looking forward to it.
Have you learned at least one actionable step to incorporate into your real estate investing? If so, please consider returning some of that value by leaving a positive review, subscribing to our YouTube channel, or joining our growing network on Facebook and Twitter. You can find links to all of our social media accounts in the show notes. See you next time.